Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people make friends. I'm just trying to make you a little money. My job, it's not just to educate, but to entertain and teach. I need you to watch. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC. Hey, tweet me Jim Cramer. All we wanted was an all clear sign. And we can thank Fed Chief Jay Powell for giving us one today when he spoke after the Federal Open Market Committee ended leaving Fed rates unchanged. Now, did he technically say you can go buy stocks
buy,
now?
Buy.
Of course not. He's the Fed Chief. But he might have well done so. How do I know? Well, it's really this simple. You can timestamp the words of the Fed chief at his press conference with the intraday chart of a strong S&P afternoon rebound. And you can see where he made some dovish comments, which carried the stock market from deep in the red to decently positive. Right then, to new heights. It was so perfectly timed that you had no wonder about how we got into the
house of pleasure.
Yep, Jay Powell has become the bull's friend for the moment. Maybe best friend. Even as we pulled back into the close, Dow ultimately gaining 87 points, S&P dipping 0.34%, NASDAQ declined 0.33%. Things are very skittish. But you know what? Lately, we've been worried about persistent inflation in shelter, cars, foodstuffs, which might have forced the Fed to actually start raising rates again. Even as there are also signs of softness, I call them brown shoots, all over the place. But fortunately, Jay Powell chose to worry more about the brown shoots than the green trees. He's betting that inflation will head lower again after a period where it's kind of stalled going down. He's not talking about tightening. He just thinks that inflation will gradually go away on its own, making him more of a dove than a hawk. When asked about stagflation, the worst case scenario for stocks, he actually made a joke. Yeah. Saying he didn't see the stag or the flation. Fed joke. Plus, Powell said he's going to slow down the Fed's bond sales, something that's been pushing longer term interest rates higher because it creates a new flood of supply. You know, supply, when there's too much, it means it's got to go to a new level, drops, and then rates go higher. But when he stopped and said he's going to pull back on that, that's a dovish sign. Of course, it's not like Powell said he's looking for a summer rate cut. But he was badgered repeatedly by the press about whether the Fed may need to raise rates again. But you know what? He's too smart. He never took the bait. Instead, with a little bit of sparring, he took the dreaded rate hike scenario off the table and the market rallied. Now, I want to make it clear that I hate even talking about Fed speak. That is a language. It's an odd jargon, created by all the Fed governors and the presidents, reporters, and analysts who must just chatter each other and think it's really funny. We rallied in part because, as I just mentioned, the Fed isn't going to dump its considerable bond hoard into the market to drive rates up. But we mostly rallied because many so-called experts on the Fed had come around to the idea that that Powell's gotten much more hawkish of late, which could be a nightmare for stocks. Because the whole rally since last fall was based on the idea that the Fed was done tightening. Fortunately, these Fed speakers, well, they were wrong. Frankly, these people who try to game the Fed are almost always going to be wrong. First, they thought that we were going to get 6 rate cuts. Then they said 3. Then they said 1. Then they said 0. And now, last week, they started talking about an actual hike. You know what? Here's what they were each time. And that's good news for the market. I think it could get more heated for the rest of the week, as we have to bet that the Fed was clued into Friday's employment report, even as I actually don't think that Powell's seen it because it's a tightly kept secret. So what wins in this environment? What do you do? Well, pretty much everything's going to kind of work here. We can buy healthcare and drugs because Powell's telling you the economy is most likely going to get weaker. Buyers flock to J&J under a belief that it can finally put paid the lawsuits over allegations of traces of asbestos in their talc that plaintiffs say caused ovarian cancer. The stock's so low that I think it could go higher still if J&J can reach a comprehensive settlement. The plaintiffs have lost 16 out of the last 17 cases against J&J, so I bet you they capitulate. Buyers flocked to the chemical stocks, too. And that was because of the huge turnaround in Cramer fave Chapel Trust named DuPont, which saw almost its entire product line accelerate. Everything from water to semiconductors. I can't believe it because it's been down and out. Buyers also reached for the home builders again. Oh, yeah, well, that's what they do when they think that there might be a rate cut. Remember my rap on the home builders. They're winners every time the Fed speaks dovishly because that's what pushes mortgage rates down and makes homes more affordable. But most important, the buyers like tech. They specifically like the tech companies that reported great numbers recently with stocks that have been pushed down for tangential reasons. Remember, I always tell you, look to buy these in a general market pull down like we had. First tech that they love, well, of course, the buyers reached for Amazon, which reported last night an absolutely tremendous lights out quarter with strength in Amazon Web Services, advertising, and Amazon International. You absolutely have to love that troika of positives. Amazon's at the top of the class when it comes to generative AI. It's got so much going for that it's almost too long to list here. It was a smash hit. If you get a chance, read the release. You will be blown away. Second is Alphabet. Remember, I said that Alphabet, the parent of Google, has to be bought on any weakness. Sure enough, you got big weakness yesterday. It was time to pounce. Alphabet has some amazing properties. YouTube's doing great. Google Cloud is terrific. And what a good artificial intelligence platform, to say nothing of the core search business. Third is Microsoft. Have you seen this stock? This thing is just getting killed. It had fallen to a level below where it was trading before that amazing quarter. I think there's nothing better than owning Microsoft right now, and you got to check that box, as my Chapel Trust has. Beyond tech, this market likes the banks. Their stocks have been so strong on the notion that they'll eventually get rate cuts, even as their stocks shouldn't really even need rate cuts. Confounding, but I'll take it. More on what may be the best bank to buy later in the show. What's not working? Some of the semiconductors. Because AMD produced a weaker-than-expected quarter, as people who focus on its embedded business and its gaming business were disappointed, while those who were concerned about a data center slowdown were spooked by a lowball boost in their forecast for generative AI chips. Now, I believe that CEO Lisa Su was simply being conservative, so I'm not going to sweat this program. Perhaps people feared that Supermicro, that's a compadre of AMD, might have to raise cash after its largely in-line data, that's revenues in-line, numbers freaking out the whole AI infrastructure. If you're near to the end of the report, you'll see it says, hey, maybe we have to raise money, and that's what killed the stock. Oh, and there's no data center slowdown, none that anybody can find, and yet people keep looking for one, which brings me to NVIDIA. These days, NVIDIA seems to rally far less often than it goes down, doesn't it? Given that every one of its large tech customers desperately needs their chips. We know that Amazon said it needed them last night. So did Google, no doubt with Oracle, absolutely Meta. They said they're spending fortunes on stuff, but apparently that's not enough. I think people just believe that anything connected to the data center should be avoided, and NVIDIA won't report for a very long time. So I think they're going to shoot at it and shoot at it. My view, of course, is to own it, don't trade it. But I totally understand if people are going to sell it. That's what they do. By the way, later on in the show, we'll talk about Apple. I'm seeing the same thing. Do you want to dodge a quarter? You want to dodge it? Be my guest. I'm never good enough to know when to get in and get out, so I'm sticking. While I disagree with the NVIDIA verdict, I know it's severe. It says dump the semis and buy the users of their chips, buy the customers instead. You know, I've railed endlessly against these Fed heads, those analyst strategists and journalists who attempt to interpret everywhere from the Federal Reserve. They can at all times be more important than what's happening at any individual company. The good news is the Fed only meets 8 times a year. The bad news is the Friday we get the employment report, and that produces a whole other set of macro commentators who are going to second-guess Jay Powell for what he said even today, 48 hours later. Don't these guys should get better jobs. Here's my view. Tune these people out. There's only one person worth listening to in this entire universe when it comes to this stuff, and that happens to be the plain-speaking Fed chief himself, Jay Powell. He's been consistent the whole time. He raised rates until he feared he could tip us into recession. Then he stopped raising rates, and the economy got hot again. But then interest rates went higher on their own, and now we've gotten some brown shoots that are helping to slow the economy. So the bottom line is this, people. Powell took all this in and recognized that in these newfound brown shoots means he doesn't need to raise interest rates again. He's consistent, and that puts us in a much better position. Until we fret about Apple and how China sunk it, that's tomorrow's business, by the way, addressed later in the show tonight. And we get concerned that we might have strong wage growth data on Friday's job report, which would cause a whole new group of critics to question Powell's judgment. Hence why we reversed in the last half hour of trading today, as if, once again, Powell doesn't mean what he says. Hey, how about we go to Gary in my home state of Pennsylvania? Gary.
Hey, Mr. Kramer, I am in the house of pain with Bristol Myers over the last couple of months. Shed some wisdom on me, please. Love your show.
Man, what a terrible address, frankly. Okay, now here's the problem with that. They told you. They told you when we were at J.P. Morgan that, look, we don't have the horses now, but the dividend is safe. So, I mean, what that was the clarion call to move out. At these prices, I still think the clarion call is on because I don't see anything in the hopper. Feels a little like Pfizer to me. Let's go to Max in Illinois. Max.
Jimbo.
Yo.
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad. How about you, partner?
I'm good.
Oh,
hey,
good.
So you're always preaching stocks that are best in class. And for me, there's none more promising and holy than Costco. What say you?
I like Costco very much. Now, Costco is what's happened. We got a new CEO. We got a new CFO. And there are always going to be people who say, well, you know what? The stock paid the dividend. It's over. I think the stock is basing. More on basing later in the show. But that's what the stock is doing in basing, and that makes me like it. I think Jay Powell has realized that these brown shoots are doing some of the work for him. And his consistent messaging in the face of endless Fed speak tells me that I think you should just hang on to stocks. And when we get those pullbacks like we had the other day, yes, if you want to buy Google, you want to buy Amazon, look, you want to buy Meta even. How about that? And Microsoft for certain. Jay Powell knows what he's doing. The people who talk about him don't. Much more Mad Money ahead. Restaurant stocks have become a tough corner of the market. Haven't they? After reporting a strong quarter, could Wingstop be the winner chicken dinner in the space? I got the exclusive with the CEO. Then my alma mater, Goldman Sachs, recently hit a new all-time high. But could the momentum continue? I'm going off the charts to find out. And Tanger reported a solid quarter last night, but saw its stock got hit in response. Head scratching. I'm going to break down the numbers with the CEO to get a better sense of where the company stands. So I want you to stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Fact: running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact: smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com to start saving.
What do we make of these numbers from Wingstop? The Red Hot Chicken Wing chain reported this morning. Numbers were just excellent. Wingstop delivered another great quarter, 21-cent earnings beat off a 77-cent basis. We're getting used to that, aren't we? Higher than expected revenue, spectacular, 21.6% domestic same-store sales growth. When Wall Street was looking for just less than 13%, management even raised their full-year forecast for same-store sales and new store growth. We haven't been getting a lot of those lately. Yet after initially rallying to a new all-time high this morning, the stock saw actually a predictable wave of profit-taking, actually finished slightly in the red. Now, you know what? I think that's just because Wingstop stock came in hot, just like its wings. Even after today's dip, it's up almost 50% for the year after rallying 86% last year. So are you getting this great quarter for free, or is there something missing here? Let's check in with Michael Skipworth. He's the president and CEO of Wingstop. Do you get a better read on the quarter? Mr. Skipworth, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hello, Jim. Thanks for having me.
So I got a theory, and my theory is that if you offer incredible value and you haven't raised prices a lot, and people like going there and they like the convenience of it, then you are going to hit it out of the park. And it just so happens that only a handful of people have that formula, and you're one of them.
That's right, Jim. We've been measuring record highs for the brand in quality and value, and we think the consumers rewarding us for that. It showed up in a big way in our first quarter, where we delivered 21.6% same-store sales growth. But it's important to note that almost all of that was driven by transaction growth. And that's on top of 20 points of transaction growth in Q1 of last year.
Okay, I want people at home to understand that, because I got criticized earlier today by my wife. She said, you got to stop using the word throughput. No one knows what that means. And they don't know about transactions either, because they just know that that's something where you pay at the register. What you're really saying is that you got more people going in and you're not raising prices to make the numbers.
That's right, Jim. We've got a lot more people coming into Wingstop. In fact, in the first quarter, we set a record high number of new guests that we brought into the brand, which gets us really excited about the effectiveness of our strategy, one that we think is working. System-wide sales grew 37%. It's almost creating a flywheel within our national advertising fund to continue to bring top-of-mind awareness while we deliver a great guest experience and deliver on that quality and value that guests come to Wingstop for.
Well, let's talk about your advertising. You're on Wednesday NBA, okay? You sponsored Wednesday primetime matchup. Now, here's an example of what I think people are really missing. We all talk about how linear TV doesn't do anything, no one watches it, blah, blah, blah. The fact is, they only watch the sports, because you could be on any one of these cops and fire shows. You think anybody would come? Of course not. What is it that makes it so there's anything worth watching other than sports on linear TV? Because that seems to be the only place you should be advertising on.
That's right, Jim. It's a strategy we leaned into a couple years ago, and it's been paying dividends. We're leaning into live sports. This first quarter, we were on the NFL playoffs for the first time as a brand, which is really exciting. But yet we were only ran two spots on a weekend where there were four games. So we have a ton of room to advertise more and drive brand awareness and bring more consumers into Wingstop.
All right, let's talk about what you're doing in technology to get people in and out. I had a discussion this morning, I guess you could call it that, with Starbucks. And Starbucks, I think, is, let's say they've had an ill-buy strategy of trying to get everybody in, then trying to get them out. And that's not really worked. And they've got a mobile ordering thing that's supposed to work, and that's not really working. What are you doing in technology to make it so when I go to my Wingstop, I'm not waiting outside while people are trying to figure out whether I should have dark meat or white meat or some nonsense like that?
Yeah, Jim, investing in technology isn't anything new for Wingstop. Q1, 68% of our sales were digital. And so we've amassed a database of over 40 million users strong. We've invested in that database to enrich the data so that we inform our marketing strategy. We inform how to personalize that guest ordering experience. And that's exactly what My Wingstop is going to unlock, is allow us to lean into this rich database that we have into hyper-personalization and create a best-in-class digital ordering experience that's going to bring guests back more often, more frequently, and drive a higher average check, which we're pretty excited about.
Are there areas right now that have enough wing stops that they shouldn't get another? And if I wanted to be a franchise, I wouldn't want to open there because it would be cannibalizing?
Jim, that's part of the excitement around our story is the amount of runway we have in front of us. Well over a triple our current footprint, which was just over 2,000 globally, We have a ton of growth. Our most mature market is Dallas-Fort Worth, where we continue to open restaurants. We continue to see AUVs grow, and the business is going really well in Dallas, and we see a ton of room to expand our footprint. And we have a ton of demand for growth with our brand partners. You saw us increase our outlook for unit development this year, and that's really driven by the pace of sites that are coming into our pipeline, which really showcase the excitement for growth with Wingstop.
All right, one last question. I'm sure the people out there say, wait a second, I can open a chain of wings. Wait, he's got nothing special. In fact, you do have something. And I guess it's hard to pin down. If I followed you for a couple of days, maybe I could get it. But there's a love for a brand. And that is a lot harder than people just saying, you know what, I'll add a wing store, isn't it?
That's right, Jim. We're celebrating our 30th year of being in business this summer, which we're excited about. But we have built almost a cult following,
right,
and we see an opportunity to make Wingstop more mainstream because, as you mentioned earlier, consumers want to pay for and they want to use those discretionary dollars for quality and value. And that's something that Wingstop delivers on in that cook-to-order, craft-made, high-quality Wingstop experience.
One last thing for me to ask, I want people to know. You talked about AUV. That means the average unit volume that to get to 2 million in the old days, maybe Chipotle could do it. Most people were in there 1.2, 1.3. People need to know that you don't, and by the way, you don't let everybody be it. It's really hard to get a franchise from Wingstop. You got to show that you're really successful. But what is, if I got a Wingstop, if I was accepted into that inner circle and I put down X, how much do I make when you get to 2 million for the unit volume?
Jim, it's the most compelling unit economic model out there. It's about, on average, $500,000 investment. And our brand partners are seeing a payback in less than 2 years on cash-on-cash returns of 70%.
Well, there you go. That is exactly, those of us who have been in the restaurant business, we only dream of those returns. I want to thank Michael Skipworth, President and CEO of Wingstop. Thank you so much, Michael. Good to see you as always.
Thank you, Jim.
Man, Mike's back after the break. Absolutely.
Coming up, as good as Goldman, Cramer goes off the charts with a look at the banking heavyweight. Next.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
As we all know, this market's gotten a lot more difficult over the past couple of months. But you know what? There's still some consistent winners out there, but only you got to know where to look, right? These are companies that can thrive even in an economy full of brown shoots where the Feds decide to keep interest rates higher for longer. Companies with stocks that still have plenty of room to run, but could still do well if the Fed does what it said today, which is maybe cut rates when things get softer. At times like this, you know what you have to do? You have to consult the technicals to search for stocks with the best momentum, because that's been what's working. And if the underlying fundamentals are good, they can keep working. And that's why we're going off the charts with the help of Dan Fitzpatrick. Oh, he's a terrific technician I've known for ages. He's the founder of Stock Market Mentor. He's host of his own podcast called The Fitz Factor. Back in late February, he pounded the table on NVIDIA and Supermicro. And while both stocks have pulled back pretty, let's say, horrendously from their highs of late, they're still up huge from where he made his chart-inspired recommendations. So what is Fitz like right now? He's focused on the best of the financials, or the fins, as we call them. Many of these have been good performers since the market bottom last October, but until recently, they were largely ignored by the media because, of course, everyone's focused on NVIDIA or Meta or Microsoft, the rest of Magnificent Seven. Over the last couple of weeks, the Magnificent Seven, Well, one by one, they've lost, let's say, luster. How about that? And then Tesla just rebounded and came back, but it had fallen pretty hard. It's still down huge from its highs. I think people are looking away from that group now. In this environment, Fitzpatrick believes the best of the banks is start getting a lot more attention than even the Magnificent Seven. You know what his favorite is? Goldman Sachs. And it hit a new all-time high today, and the stock stands poised to go a lot higher. It certainly doesn't hurt that Goldman reported a great quarter a couple of weeks ago with capital markets activity making a big comeback. You know, we have a lot of IPOs these days. These guys were able to make a lot of money even when IPOs and equity offerings and mergers had dried up. All key revenue sources. So you can only imagine how profitable Goldman's going to get now that these areas have started turning around. That's one reason why we own the other big investment bank, Morgan Stanley, for the Chapel Trust. But that's become more of an asset management play. I wish there were more IPOs and M&A. I think that's what sent that stock up. Goldman gives you more exposure to the resurrection of the investment banking business, but it's also back once again emphasizing the wealthy client advisory business. And that happens to be the division I toiled in many years ago. Yes, I'm a proud alum. So let's talk about the charts, starting with the longer-term weekly chart to get some perspective. Fitzpatrick points out that Goldman stock has been in a basing pattern for 2.5 years. This is just a pure basing part, okay? It's just stuck in an admittedly broad trading range, basically drifting sideways. Look at this, you know, just the same kind of thing. You can see how the 40-week moving average, which is the blue, has been basically knifing right through the trading range. And it's also pretty flat. Looks pretty boring, right? According to Fitzpatrick, that's a good thing, though, because this is what it looks like when a stock builds a base. And eventually that base can turn into a trampoline. You reach a point where anybody who was going to sell at the high end of the range is already sold. So once buyers start getting really interested, then the stock can soar. So we're always looking for a basing pattern when we're doing our technical work on stocks, okay? Now, you can see how Goldman's been moving sideways for the better part of the last 4 months. This is the point where the base has been firmed up. Meanwhile, the stock, it's finally started printing a series of higher lows along the way. According to Fitzpatrick, one rule of technical analysis is that the longer a stock builds a base, the more that base supports a major move higher. And Goldman has got a very strong base built up over these months. Sure enough, just a few weeks ago, the stock ran higher on high volume, printing a new all-time high because that last quarter was terrific. But as Fitzpatrick sees it, Goldman just gotten started here, and the stock's ripe for more upside. I know a lot of people might say, oh, please, this thing has just been so great. I'm late. That's not what he's saying. He's saying the opposite. So let's take a look at this next chart. It'll show you what makes him so confident. All right, now look at this. Let's zoom in. This is Goldman's daily chart, okay? You can see how all the weak hands got washed out last October when the stock pulled back down to $300. Okay, so you know this is where you want to look. This was a big breakdown. A lot of people are starting to say bad things about David Solomon, the CEO, again. They're so fickle, darn it. People just threw in the towel, gave up on the stock like we saw with so many other times. Very ugly moment for the market. Retrospect, it was a great buying opportunity, even though, like I said, everyone was saying, oh, this is not the franchise that we remember. Since that capitulation low, Fitzpatrick points out that Goldman stock has been quite strong to the point where you can see very obvious signs of institutional buying. Down here, you can see the big volume, okay? You know it's big volume. Institutional money managers accumulating stock because when Goldman rallies, it does so on extremely high volume. So here you see that goes up, and that's a bullish crossover. The big boys need to buy massive quantities of stock, or else the positions will be too small to move the needle, meaning that it's not meaningful enough to gun their portfolio. After that initial rebound for the lows, Goldman started dancing around in the tight range around mid-December that we described and spent the next few months basically holding above its 50-day, that's the orange, okay? Finally, on April 12th, the sellers came out and pushed the stock down. This was a very weird thing. Pushed the stock down to the point where it tested the floor of support of the 50-day. All right, so remember, when you've got that, that's the 50-day is the red. So it tested the support, and it held. Fitzpatrick says that's a good sign because it reveals additional demand for the stock on a pullback. Now, with the weekly chart showing a multi-year base and the daily chart showing the stock started to run after some tight consolidation, Fitzpatrick thinks that Goldman should be able to keep running. By the way, it's not an expensive stock at all, and that's as long as the market plays along. Lately, it feels like just about everything's being put up for sale, even as Goldman stock has held up just fine. But in this environment, Fitz believes it pays to be patient, and I agree with him. In an ideal world, he's recommending that you pull back to 400-410, which would really be, I mean, you know, you're talking about right here. Now, that's not it, too much to ask. He doesn't want you coming in here and then have it like that. I like his pullback to right there and a base. That's better than pulling the trigger here at 427. If you get a 17 to 27 point pullback, that's going to put the stock closer to the 50-day moving average, which should act as that powerful floor or a line in the sand. But in the real world, Fitzpatrick thinks a pullback probably is unlikely because Goldman stock is just so red hot. And that means for me, buy some here and then buy some if it gets there. Of course, Fitzpatrick has a big caveat, as these technical analysts often have, which is that if the stock drops below the 50-day moving average, it means the floor has fallen out from underneath the thing. And he says that wrecks the whole thesis. Basically, if it goes below $400, he's guessing something has gone very wrong. That's why he recommends a stop loss order around that level. If you still like it, you can always buy the stock back at the lower level. My view, I do not like stop losses. I would like to be in there aggressively monitoring my portfolio. As I see it, things are looking up for Goldman Sachs on the earnings basis. The chart on its side could be exactly the kind of stock that works here. Rather than waiting for an ideal pullback, I think you put on a small position up here and then hopefully buy more shares on the way down. Bottom line, the charts as interpreted by Dan Fitzpatrick suggest that Goldman Sachs has gotten its group back and the stock could have a lot more room to run. And you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if that isn't exactly what it has. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Rustin in California. Rustin.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Rustin.
Jim, I have a company about a small little company, on the West Coast called PayPal. Solid earnings report the other day with improved guidance while continuing to claim they're in a transition year. New CEO Alex Frist has a background in small to medium businesses at Intuit. With the current valuation and new leadership, Jim, is the stock a play?
Okay, so I did some work on it last night. I was surprised that the stock finished down after being up a couple, but I am with you. I think that this guy, Alex, is just fantastic. You know, David Faber did an interview with him, and I was so impressed. And that was literally about 8 points ago. I think you have something here with PayPal. It was undermanaged. It's very inexpensive stock. I still think it's ripe for a merger, but it is a $69 billion company. But I am with you. All right. The charts is interpreted by my old friend Dan Fitzpatrick. Point to Goldman Sachs going higher from here, and it would not surprise me if he isn't right because the numbers are very good. Now, much more Mad Money had. Tanger saw some softness in occupancy rates that had investors concerned. I don't know. Maybe it's an opportunity. Well, let's get to the bottom of it and seeing if today's post-earnings dip could be viable and sit down with the CEO. Then, if your recent report on weakness in China, just your stock goes down. What can I say? Weakness, China, sell. I'm sharing what areas of the market are most impacted and how you can prepare for one big earnings report this week, which could face the same exact problem, even though it was upgraded yesterday by an analyst who, frankly, has been wrong for a very long time. And, of course, all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Kramer. Last night, we got results from Tanger. You know, I love this one. It's the retail real estate investment trust that owns dozens of outlet centers where you can find some terrific bargains. I've been supporting this one since 2008. You know that? I think it was a solid quarter. The core funds from operations per square, that's the real estate investment trust equivalent of earnings, came in 1 cent better than expected. Occupancy rate was a bit soft, but we're going to work on that for a second. The lease termination fees saw a sizable increase year over year. So they're losing a few tenants, but that's not necessarily negative. On the other hand, they saw a 5.2% increase in same-store net income, not net operating income, which was definitively positive. So the stock got hit slightly today, and some people don't know what to make of it. Let's go to work then on it. I think this one does a great job in an environment where price-conscious consumers are shopping. And yes, I'm, of course, enticed by the 4% yield. Let's go straight to the source with Stephen Yalof. He's the president and CEO of Tanger. Learn more about the situation. Mr. Yalof, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great to be here.
All right, so Stephen, one of the things that we don't talk enough about on the show, because we don't have high-frequency traders watching, they want income, and they want consistent income. They want dividends that are boosted. They love a 4% yield. You are all of those right now.
That's right. You know, we just raised our dividend again, and I think that's important to return to the shareholders, our investors. They can either take those checks and put them away, or they can reinvest in our company, and hopefully that's what they're choosing to do.
Okay, so now explain to them. Put me in the boardroom where you propose that increase in your distribution. What does it sound like? What do you tell the people?
Well, again, you know, you have to take a look at future growth and where we're going. And I think we've got a great growth story. You know, we've got a fantastic team that we've assembled over the past 3 or 4 years. We've come out from COVID like a shotgun. and the company continues to grow. And we think there's even more growth embedded, not only in the organic existing portfolio, but in the new assets that we just purchased and the Nashville asset that we took out of the ground last quarter.
Now, it's important when you discuss the new assets that they haven't been tangerized yet, I'll say, meaning that they may have some custom, some open spaces that you can put new tenants in, or they may have, say, I don't want to pick on anybody, but Express just filed for bankruptcy. Maybe they've got something where you can actually do an upgrade. Just because you lose a tenant does not mean that you're necessarily longer term going to do worse. In some cases, you're going to be doing better.
Well, I think some of the reaction is to the fact that we've traditionally, at least over the last couple of years, have renewed existing tenants at a rate of about 95%. So when a deal comes up for renewal, we get significantly higher rent, but we've been willing to renew that tenant. Now what we're saying is there's more upside in replacing a tenant that may be oversized, that maybe hasn't invested in their store, whose sales maybe have started to decline. So it's up to us as stewards of our property, as general merchandise managers of our assets, to go out there and replace certain tenants with higher, better producing tenants. And the upside there is we're not getting rid of that tenant.
Right.
Maybe we're downsizing them and putting them someplace else in the shopping center. And when they move in the shopping center, you get a new store, a new concept, a right-sized store, and perhaps you get better productivity out of that asset as well.
Okay, so I stay today in New York, so I start thinking, all right, my wife's going to be moving out east soon, and that means that when it's rainy, she goes to one of your outlets. Are we going to find anything new? Because we do find that there's a novelty element to going to a Tanger outlet.
That's right. Well, you know, especially in the center in Riverhead, which is the one I think you're referring to.
Yes, indeed.
We have a number of new tenants that we just announced.
You do?
In Riverhead,
what do you have?
So it's going to be exciting. We just added Bash and, you know, a number of tenants that we're elevating the portfolio up,
okay,
there, which is great. We've got some food and beverage retailers that are also going to join us. We're also have done a great job of adding furniture. And I think that furniture has been a great driver of traffic. You know, it's wonderful when you build a shopping center and you hear Tiger Woods is putting a Pop Stroke next door. Or you hear that there's going to be a water park or some great draw that's going to bring tourists in. What we're thinking about doing, how do we create our own draw? So we're using our peripheral land. We're using some of that other vacancy to put really exciting tenants in that draw a whole different customer that never came to our centers before. New customer, local customer, we want them to shop with us far more frequently than they do. And when they do, they stay longer. And when they stay longer, they ultimately spend more.
Now, are there still some high-end stores that have resistance? Because I find the highest of retail is in one of your outlets these days.
You know, I don't think there's price. If you're asking if there's price resistance for the consumer, I think what makes the shopping experience in outlet center so exciting for the consumer is that customer is aspirational. That's a customer that might come in thinking that they can only afford a certain price point, but if they're in that outlet environment, all brands become accessible to them because they're on sale every day. So you might have thought that Coach or Kate Spade or Michael Kors was out of reach, but when you walk into that store because the sign outside says everyday pricing 40% off, all of a sudden it becomes reachable. And you might have aspired to buy into that product your entire life, and now you have the opportunity to do so in our portfolio. And you know what makes it more exciting is that retailers that want to be in our assets, new to outlet retailers, understand that's a great talking point for us as sellers of space to say, listen, you might have an opportunity to get a whole new customer that you don't get anywhere else, who might not want to shop you on Madison Avenue. But here you see a new customer, you can trade them up through your ecosystem, and now, retailer, you can make them a customer of yours for life.
All right, well, next question. I had a friend who was watching the show, and he said, okay, look, I get some of the bills, but I mean, Huntsville, really? I mean, no one's going to Huntsville for tourism. I said, look, the guy knows more than I do. What do you do when you go to Huntsville?
Well, first of all, you go see the Space Pandas play baseball. I mean, Huntsville's Rocket City. It's home of Space Camp. So there's a tremendous amount of growth in Huntsville. There's permanent population growth. There's a lot of tourism that's going, and there's a lot of, we see the office market, it's on fire. In fact, they're growing the office market. What we saw in Huntsville and what we were fortunate to see is tremendous amount of growth and upside and high price points. And we see an opportunity where we can bring higher end retailers. You know, in fact, we just announced today on the earnings call that we signed our first lease in Huntsville. We've only had the project for about three months. Warby Parker is going to be joining us. What a great retailer. They're not in the Tanger ecosystem yet. So their front door to get them in the Tanger ecosystem was this Huntsville property, which now hopefully we'll have an opportunity to have a conversation with them and take them through our property set.
Well, I'm glad my wife is away right now, because what she would do is she'd go, all right, I'm going down to Huntsville with some of my girlfriends. We're going to go buy some property, which I'm tired of because I'm getting too old for that conversation to occur. I want to thank Stephen Yalof, who's the president and CEO of Tanger. 4% yield, great growth, been with these guys forever. Mad Money's back after the break.
When we return, master the markets one stock at a time. The Lightning Round is up next.
It is time! It's time for the Lightning Round. Come on, Bob. Gold, no, same as talks about Bob, sell super into the call. So, of course, Bob, step for the play. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Skinny Dad? Go to the lightning round. Let's start with Ethan in Connecticut. Ethan!
Thank you, Jim. Booyah. Appreciate all you've done in the must-do-good, while-doing-well world of philanthropy.
You are very kind. It's been a tough couple days. I did need to hear that. I appreciate it. What's going on?
You're doing great, man. I appreciate it.
Thank
my
you.
Question
thank
is on Matterport, ticker MTPR.
Oh, no, you got to ring the register there, my friend. You're a winner. You're a winner. You got the chicken dinner. Let's move on. Let's go to Gregory in California. Gregory.
I'm a very proud club member today. You didn't pull any punches. Hashtag no free passes.
Ooh.
Like you, Jim, I'm an avid gardener, and I recently bought a small position in this company that keeps increasing their margins, beating the street, and are profitable, and I'm down 20%. So I'm not sure if I should buy some more or hold before earnings in a couple of weeks. I want to keep watering, but pardon the pun here, what's the catalyst for the sun to shine on next tracker?
Oh, Ned Shug! Ooh, man, the stock's come down. Look, I'm a believer in Shug. I'm a believer in their product. I think it's a buy. I would not mess around. I think you buy more. I need to go to Greg in New Jersey. Greg.
Big booyah, Jimmy Chill.
Giant booyah back at you, Greg. What's going on?
Jim, Dell is reporting at the end of this month. And at 16 times forward earnings, is this a good entry point?
Yeah, it's cheap, actually. I know it reported that great quarter last. Michael Dell's terrific. I want you to buy it. At one point, it was down really big today. That's a good stock to own. Let's go to Dave in Illinois. Dave.
Dr. Kramer.
Dave.
You were bullish last month with Okta's CEO, Todd McKinnon.
Yes.
So, Jim, still bullish now?
Oh, am I ever. I think Okta is terrific. He came back big from that hack. He learned from it. He's humbled by it. And he's the man to see. Let's go to Alan in Florida. Alan.
Hey, Jim. Good to talk to you again.
Oh, sure. Same with you.
Two quick questions for you about Ford Motor Company.
Okay.
One is, what do you think their long-term outlook is? And number two, do you think the outcome of November's election will have an impact on...
Well, look, if President Trump wins, then he'll probably roll back, let you be as, you know, as polluting as possible. That would be good. But more important, we need a buyback from Ford. Until we get a buyback from Ford, we ain't getting nothing. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, it's the one headwind that can stop any stock in its tracks. But don't let China troubles slow you down. Stick with Cramer.
You can't asterisk China, no matter what you do. If there's weakness in China, it's going to take your company stock down if you do business there. On the eve of Apple's report, I have to tell you that China haunts me more than anything else when it comes to that great company's numbers that we're about to see. Apple simply got too much Chinese exposure for the company to be able to skate over the weakness. Whenever there's a problem with your business in mainland China, Wall Street assumes it's an existential crisis. It's all the end of the road, including Apple, despite its insistence in making products by China for China and then selling a ton of product there. I know hope should never be part of the equation in this business, but I sincerely hope that the only problem here is a weak Chinese consumer and not a hostile Chinese government. Apple creates so many jobs over there, it would be strange for the Communist Party to punish them while rewarding Elon Musk with a self-driving win practically overnight. Either way, though, we have ample evidence of what happens to your stock when you admit to Chinese weakness. Consider the stock of Estee Lauder, EL, which saw its stock plummet more than 13% today, even though it had a great quarter. CEO Fabrizio Freda said, quote, for mainland China, we returned to organic sales growth, albeit at a slower pace than expected, amid an overall soft prestige beauty industry, end quote. CFO Tracy Travis added, quote, in mainland China, we expect the ongoing softness of overall prestige beauty to continue to pressure net sales, end quote. I thought the stock should have been up because Estee Lauder finally liquidated the excess inventory that had been dragging them down. Oh, but China's 28% of their sales, and therefore the stock got obliterated. I wish I could say that Lauder's won off, but it's just the opposite. Last night, Starbucks reported and mentioned that same-store sales were down 11% in China. That helped pulverize the stock nearly 16% today. Procter & Gamble's been talking about China being weak, and it's hurt the stock of that great company. Those join. Hey, by the way, here's some others. Tapestry and Nike, they've seen choppy results. Nike's really hurt. Now, not everybody's been crushed by China, though. DuPont saw a positive swing in Chinese business, but that term was in an industrial, which is very, very different from the consumer-focused operations I've been judging about. Apple's a quintessential consumer company, which is what has me so concerned about the trajectory of the stock if China shows a big drop-off, which I fear it most definitely will. The whole rest of the world, so much bigger than China, won't amount to a hill of beans if Apple's Chinese sales are weak. China represents 19% of Apple's business, so if we can control the narrative, because the analysts are focused on, really relentlessly focused on China, then you know the stock's going to go lower, period. It will. Here's where the confusion comes in. China remains a country where there's a huge growing middle class that could potentially gain another 400 million people in the next few years, but it's not growing overall. Theoretically, that's a ton of potential customers for Apple, though. But what if they're savers and not spenders? What if they can't afford an iPhone? What if they're just, like, down and depressed and don't want to do anything? These are real concerns, people. When you add in the Chinese government seems to be favoring Chinese brands, you can tell it might be too hard for Apple to turn things around, and it's going to get clocked when it reports. Yep, you can't take China with a grain of salt until you stop doing business there. Only then can it be asterisk. Only then will it not matter. But, of course, you got to give up some of that massive amount of earnings to get there. Until then, if you have bad China numbers, your stock is going lower no matter what, no matter how great the rest of the world might be. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise China, just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.